Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here's your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. I am Jim Masters. Another exciting edition coming your way live tonight. Our special guest for another exciting edition is Peggy Sumol. Now, she is an award-winning dancer, choreographer, and instructor who has literally dedicated her life to her craft. Her experiences are amazing and have taken her clear across the country from East Coast to West and have earned her numerous accolades and great respect within the world of dance. Her achievements, her extensive background span over 50 years, earning her bachelor's degree from the Juilliard School and her master's degree from UCLA. She's graduated with the highest of scores. Even before completing her degrees, Peggy had already built an impressive resume of instruction, choreography, and performance with many different companies, including her own. Tonight, we're going to talk about Eugene Modern Dance, which is a company that she has in Eugene, Oregon. We're also going to talk a little bit about modern dance, and then we're going to get into the choreography side because she's had such a wonderful experience working with so many choreographers and also teaching herself. So let's welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio once again. Joining me, Peggy Sumol. Peggy, good evening and welcome to the show once again.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here again.
So you're in Oregon, and what is it like? It's about 39 to 40 degrees here on the East Coast this evening. How is it where you are? A little colder?
It's a little colder. It's about 35. It's getting down. It'll be freezing. We've had some frost here and there, but nothing terrible.
Nice balmy 35, right?
Yeah, balmy, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So tell us about Eugene Modern Dance and what you do and some of the fabulous things that you offer to people when it comes to dance and choreography and so much more.
Yes, well, Eugene Modern Dance is a group that I formed about 8 years ago, and it's composed of local Eugene women, ages 25 to 68, who for the last 8 years have been studying and performing together. And this group, who came from different professions and walks of life, evolved in Peggy's dance studio in the southeast hills of Eugene. And they continued to study. The same ones stuck it out and studied and developed into the fine performers they are today. We're a nonprofit organization that performs for the sheer joy of dancing and are open to new students joining our group. You can visit www.eugenemoderndance.com for more information. And
now,
I'm originally from New York. Yeah.
Yeah, originally from New York. Yeah, what a stone's throw from the Empire State Building, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I live about a mile away from the Empire State Building, yeah. And it was a great experience to grow up in New York.
Oh, and you went to Juilliard, of course, which is an amazing place.
Right, it was.
And absolutely. Now, tell us about, for folks who are listening, who are not familiar with modern dance and what that really is. I know that modern dance is, there's a lot of physicality to modern dance, isn't it? There's a lot of, I mean, you're going to get a good physical workout, but it's also very, very technical, but beautiful as well when you actually see it and do it.
Right. I studied Graham Technique. I studied with Jose Limon, who is different from a different school, which is Graham Technique uses contraction and release and very dramatic, and Lamone's more fall and rebound using gravity. And I also studied ballet, and you continue to do, in when I teach my class, technically, a short ballet bar. First I start on the ground, warming up, stretching, doing some just basic punch-ups, that kind of thing, and then get up, do ballet bar, and then go across the floor with at least two combinations, one maybe being slow or moderately paced, and the other one fast. So it has its own rhythm, and I find doing the ballet bars extremely strengthening, and I'm so happy because I've never had a person be injured in my class, which is,
phenomenal.
It's pretty good for 50 years. They come in injured, but they never get injured in my class because I'm very careful about that.
Absolutely.
So, and modern dance, the actual term modern dance is an ever-changing dance form. Like modern art or contemporary music, it's explorative and it's experimental. It finds its own language to express its innermost feelings and thoughts. Some forms of modern dance incorporate cultural influences, different cultural influences, that not just American, but others.
So can you give us an example? Could you give us an example for people that are listening to us right now, where they would be seeing modern dance? Where is it prevalent right now? Are there current examples that they can relate to? And, so that's modern dance, where there's performance happening right now that they would see and then they can connect with.
Right. Well, if you're in New York, I'm not really in touch with those places, but I know that if you just Google it on the internet, where can I see modern dance? I bet you'll get a list of places that I remember, the Cubiculo, I remember places like the Kitchen, and I think the Kitchen still exists. There's Dance Theater Workshop that still exists on close to where I used to live, and there's the Joffrey Ballet School, but they mainly, that was a school that was not a performance area, but those other places I mentioned are performance areas, and there was the 92nd Street Y, which I believe probably still functions. And I know that there are a lot more. Can't think off the top of my head, but I'm sure if you Google it, you'd find it.
It's all there. Can you tell us about some of the amazing places where you have performed? I know when we were talking in prep for the show, you have performed at Lincoln Center in Manhattan, which, of course, is a well-known place. And what are some other places you've had the honor and pleasure of performing over the years?
Right. Well, I performed. Let's get my notes out here.
Yeah. I mean, 50 years, you've been all over.
I'm going back 50 years here, so I'm just shuffling through and getting the list out. I performed with my own company.
Yeah.
Back in... From 1965 to 69, I was a member and soloist of the Anna DiSocco Dance Company.
Oh, boy.
Then in 1966, I performed in the Oristaya and the Birds, which was choreographed by Helen McGehee, who's a member, I don't know if she's still alive, but was a member of the Martha Graham Dance Company, and that was in Ypsilanti, Michigan. I performed and choreographed for the group Image, which was a multimedia group in New York City. I founded and directed my own dance company from 1970 to 1977 in New York City. I founded and choreographed and performed in the Kim. I combined my skills with another fellow named Kim Arrow, and we founded a company from 77 to 1983. And I performed in a work by a friend of mine, Nira Anamara Silverblatt, in the Olympic Arts Festival at the Japan American Theater in Los Angeles. And my own work, I performed in the New York Shakespeare Theater, Lincoln Center Dance Festival, Choreo Grand Morelli Ballet Studio Theater, the Cubiculo I mentioned before, Dance Theater Workshop, the Kitchen, ATL, Cooper Union College in New York, Papakonstasis Dance Theater in Paros, Greece, the Theater Project in Baltimore, and the Wilma Project in Philadelphia. Those were some of the ones that I did before I left New York City. I left New York in 1975.
Now, you've also, of course, worked with some phenomenal choreographers as well. Tell us some of the choreographers you had an opportunity to collaborate with over the years.
Right. Well, I've studied choreography with Louis Horst, who is the teacher of Martha Graham. And he had a more formal approach to teaching choreography. He was a musician himself, and he decided that the way he wanted to go about it was to teach what's called pre-classic dance forms. Those pre-classic dance forms came before classical music, and they consisted of the sarabande, the pavane, and these are usually, they have a distinctive style and meter. Like a Farabond is 3/4, a Pavan is a 4/4, a Galliard, it could be a 2/4 or 6/8, a jig. And so I learned, I was educated that way, but then I came across Lucas Holding, who also taught, this was at Juilliard, also taught choreography. He was a member of the Jose Limon Dance Company, and he taught in a more intuitive way, using sensing and feeling. He used his own imagery, and it was very different than learning from Louis Horst. And then I worked with Anthony Tudor, who was a great ballet choreographer and teacher, and he influenced me in the sense that I danced in one of his ballets, and I didn't really study actual technique with him. I studied dance technique, but not choreography per se. But I did glean a lot from him when he, as he choreographed and did this piece. And we, his method of communicating was almost story-like or almost poetic, little less abstract than the other teachers. And then I worked with Anna Soklo, who was very dramatic and used imagery and verbal descriptions to inspire movement. And in the end, it was Alma Hawkins, who is the sister of Eric Hawkins. But Alma Hawkins worked at UCLA for years and years. She was head of the department. And she taught, she actually worked with, she developed methods to reach disabled and learning impaired people. However, she, in the end, devised a methodology to teach choreography, and she's the one that I, who really helped me crystallize the method that I presently use. In her book, Making Dances, she offers many structured improvisations, a step-by-step method to open the heart and to create movement. And so it's her method that I focus on, and there, most choreography teachers will go into the four basic elements of choreography, but she had a special way of doing it that I connected with. So I tried to merge myself with her, even though I just read her books and I met her once in person, never really studied with her, but I felt as reading her books went that I developed a whole course just on a few books that I read from her and some other books, but very, very, you know, exact formation. And the method I use to explore dance is I explore the basic elements of dance this way. The basic elements are time, space, shape, and quality. Quality or energy, you can interchange those two. I devised structured improvisations within each of these categories to encourage students to explore these elements in their own ways. An example of this might be to make a shape of an explosion, then move through space in an explosive way. Another might be to make the shape of a piece of hard spaghetti, and then imagine you're being boiled and move through space in a boiling, wiggly way. These are simple exercises that use imagery to produce creative shapes that move through space with a particular quality or energy, all of which has its own timing. After exploring each element, I encourage the students to begin to choreograph their own piece. This involves improvisation, deciding what to keep, what to throw out, remembering the moves or the steps, relating well to the music, and finding the overall form. And positive feedback from our audience, from other class members, is always encouraged and appreciated. Other ways of producing creative responses is to use the senses, like touch. I have the students close their eyes and I present an object to touch, for instance, a pine cone. You know, a pine cone, especially in Oregon, they're very big and they're bumpy. And then I tell them to examine the shape with their fingers and then move their body in the way they feel, in the way they interpret that pine cone. So what I'm trying to teach is how to take stimulation from our world and convert it into movement, but doing it in a playful way so it's not so serious. And that way they get to explore more freely. Another way is to taste, like popcorn. or mustard and move the way that tastes in your mouth. Or using the visual sense to see a vine. And a vine means different things to different people. So moving in, some people feel that a vine could be, for instance, strangling them. Other people feel a vine is exploratory and beautiful. And then hearing, you know, you don't have to always play music. It could just be sounds of the wind, sounds of nature, or bells, and moving to that. And then smell. Like if you smelled garlic, you would move in a different way than if you smelled a rose. So it's just a way to have them abstract and connect, you know, to the world around them and not be concerned too much with trying to do too much, just because that in itself is quite an experience if you've never done it before. Yeah. Another way is using haiku poetry, taking something simple, a simple four-line poem, and having that form an image in your mind and working with that and treating it not super realistically, but just letting it influence you however it will and letting the movement come out, just letting it happen type thing.
So these are some of the methods you use to teach choreography to others, huh?
Right. And, of course, these are all, I'm mentioning improvs, but eventually they get, if you do a 10-week class, let's say one class a week, 10 sessions, they get very comfortable with expressing themselves and not feeling inhibited or silly or things like that. And they feel comfortable and they realize the value of it. And then when we finally come up with a piece, they can either take one of these experimental things and turn it into a piece, or they could come from a completely different place. Like we did I told them to, if they read a book, choose their favorite book and do a dance based on the book. It doesn't have to be literal, but it's the feeling of the book. And that worked very well. I think younger folks, 13 to say 11 to 15, like more concrete things. You know, they want something to hold on to. And one other, I'll tell you really quick, one other beautiful experiment is to give them a homework assignment, go home and find four pictures from a magazine or from a newspaper, four pictures that you really like, that you're attracted to. You don't have to tell me why, just something that you love, that's something about that picture that you love, and then paste it on a piece of paper. Now, the paper is going to be the same thing as the floor. So if you go, you reach your hand to the left, upper left paper, that's upper left spot in the room. The upper right is upstage right. Really left if you're facing the audience, but we'll just say simply, it's relating to the space in the room. And then they take a road map, and I tell them to draw a little road map using different color pens from one picture to the next. So they'll do that, and now they've created a pathway through space. And then they take the shape of the first picture and let that develop in movement. Let's say it's a volcano. So they take the shape of a volcano frozen, and then they start to move the way they think a volcano would move. And as they're doing that, they're following that road map. And that road map takes them to the second picture. Might be a flower or a cactus plant, that kind of thing. Then they take the shape of that, and then they begin to move that through space in a flowery way or a cactus-like way, if you can imagine.
They follow that road map,
and they get to the third picture. And then they finally come to the fourth picture, and the fourth picture is the end. So they created a little piece, you know, just by an easy...
From their own interpretation, too, of how they're interpreting it and how they're seeing it. So they have their own... flavor and their own twist. It's similar, there's a thread, but yet it's individualized.
Very much so, yeah. And it's really that particular little homework assignment has been very successful, and you can really...
It sounds like fun, too. I mean, it really sounds...
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's so easy, and it's fun. And then I'll give them three pieces of music, and they could choose what piece they want, and you don't have to, you know, exactly, this is just a little sketch they're doing. You don't have to exactly match it to the music or anything. They put on the music and just let them do it with the music. And it's usually very interesting because it's by chance. They're using music in relationship to the little piece they created, and it's by chance that it usually does work very well. It's
how does it change it? By when they when you add in the component of music, does it? Do you ever have them do it first without the music and then do it with the music, and the music changes what they've done a little bit? It enhances it, or it just alters it a little bit?
Right. Well, it's when you're teaching choreography, it's good to do it both ways. Some choreographers pick their music first, and they stay very much in relationship to the music. Other choreographers don't, like Merce Cunningham, they don't pick the, in fact, he would do a full piece, and the dancers would do it in silence, and then when they were about to perform, they didn't even rehearse it, he just throws on a piece of music that thinks would work. So it can be done either way, and the interesting thing is that if you don't put on music first and you just develop your idea, it will be more independent and the music won't influence it as much. And so that could be a good thing. So I do it both ways. When I teach dance, I explain that to them and they understand that. And I've had students who don't use music for a long time and then they finally, they have the piece going in their mind, they have it going in their body, and then they say, okay, I'm going to gravitate toward this piece or that piece. So it doesn't influence as much, which is a good thing. But I know I've known many, it can work both ways, it really can. But it's very experimental when you just don't, when you stay away from the music. No.
Now,
and
I know
put it on later.
Put it on. I know one of the things you definitely wanted to touch upon on tonight's broadcast was talking a little bit about some of your own personal favorite experiences before you had moved to the West Coast. Tell us a little bit about that, Peggy.
Yeah, sure. Well, when I was in New York about 1973, I choreographed a piece called Harriet, and I named it that. It's a personification of a frustrated housewife. I just came up with the name. I don't know where I got it from.
Did you do that in collaboration with Irma Bombeck?
No.
That would have been tremendous, huh?
That would have worked. It could have worked.
Yeah.
So I did it at a dance theater workshop, which was a mecca at that time. It was a beautiful studio, and Jeff Duncan was the leader, and he opened up his studio, and he rented it for very, very inexpensively so that young artists could come in and use the space. And then about once every 1 or 2 months, he would put on a performance. So you'd get to perform, and he had a big mailing list, and we'd have people from all over get up in those benches, and they loved it. So what happened was I did Harriet, and this is a dance when I grew up in New York, I was in a very tall tenement building at the top floor, and I watched the wives, the housewives, a lot. And it was a dance about a frustrated housewife who just wasn't happy in life, who was, you know, imprisoned in her own little apartment. And I used a lot of different gestures that you could relate to. And I had, my hair was long then, and I had it in big rollers and a big wire hanger on top, like an antenna. And I had a big bulky, you know, bath, well, like a nightgown. And I went forward very slowly, and I just went to the right slowly, just turned my torso, and then to the left. And with that, I used the song for the humpback whale. So that was a big juxtaposition, you know, when you talk about using music. I just heard the sounds in the background, which is, you know, that moaning, that groaning sound, that kind of whining, surreal kind of mysterious sound. And I did the whole piece. And for that dance, I got a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts.
That's fabulous.
And that was 1973, yeah. And so that was I would say, the first big breakthrough that I did.
Yeah.
Then when I was with Anna Soklow, about 1967, she brought us up to Falling Waters, which is a house that Frank Lloyd Wright built. I believe it's upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Falling Waters is a fantastic house. It's built in and around a stream that actually moves right through the house. It goes underground and around, and it's beautifully, beautifully put together. The architecture is stunning. So she had some movement that she'd already created, and she brought that to Falling Waters, and we did excerpts from pieces that she had choreographed before. And it was really memorable. I'll never forget it. It was a great experience, and, you know, very interesting. And then I created a lot of pieces for my own dance company, and I think I'd mentioned we performed these pieces, this is 1969 to 75, performed those pieces at the New York Shakespeare Theater, Lincoln Center Dance Festival, Choreographed. I'd mentioned those, Cooper Union, and so on.
Those
were the ones that I did, the ones that come to mind, and then there are ones that I did later.
How about some of the recent choreographed pieces that you've just been working on recently in the last couple of years?
Right. Well, I'm going to mention one that I actually choreographed quite a while ago, but it was a very good piece. In 1984, I choreographed Rashomon, which was inspired by the movie Rashomon, and I believe by Kurosawa. Kurosawa is Japanese. And this is about perception, how an event can occur but can be perceived differently by different people.
Yep, absolutely.
In this movie, what happens is a rape happens. And some people in the movie believe she was frightened. Some believe she was very angry, and she reacted in an angry way. Some believe she seduced the rapist. And in my dance, what I do is I do the same basic pattern of movement. I have three scrolls hanging with the so-called rapist up there, warrior-like figure, on scrolls. And I went underneath each scroll, and each version I started in the same way, but then did the same version in an angry way. We started with a fearful way, then an angry way, then a seductive way. And it was the same basic movement, but I just repeated, each phrase, little expose there took maybe 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And then the last version, and I had a big hat on me that I could actually get my whole body behind with a veil. And it would start with my foot just coming out of that veil and then creeping along the floor. And I did a lot of movements with the hat using the prop, keeping it on my head. I never lost it. And then in the end, I have her, in my version, she goes mad. So it ends in madness. So that was Rashomon. And it the madness has to do with, it's true, when even you or I during a day can change the same event. You can feel differently about, you can
Absolutely.
Feel light bulb or, you can feel differently depending on your mood.
And sometimes time, too. If when you're in the heat of the moment, when you're experiencing what just happened, your emotions are potent and raw. And then later on, when you pull away from whatever the event is or the life experience is, you take a different look at it, and maybe it wasn't as dramatic as you thought, or maybe you didn't.
Right.
Your reaction didn't have to be as strong as, or wasn't as detrimental as you thought it was at the time. It's really amazing how you're able to incorporate literally life's experiences into the form of dance, and that's what the arts are really all about: music, dance. I mean, all of it.
Right.
It's a reflection of life. In an artful way.
Yeah, and that piece I performed at the during the Olympic Arts Festival at the Japan American Theater in Los Angeles, and that was 1984.
Wow.
But I'm going to go on and tell you more recently. In 2005, I did a collaborative piece with a violinist, Denise Ayers, here in Eugene, Oregon. We call it Sarabanda, and it's a piece by Bach. Johann Sebastian Bach, and she actually had studied dance, and she's a very good violinist, and she wanted to be with me and choreograph a piece with me together, so she played the violin and I danced with her, and you can see all of these on my website, eugenemoderndance.com.
eugenemoderndance.com. Oh, you got it all in there.
And
you will be back with us on January 18th. As you continue your series with us here in Close Up Talk Radio, and I look forward to speaking with you next week as well, Peggy.
Okay, well, sounds wonderful. And thank you so much for everything.
You're a phenomenal guest, and the half hour goes by so quickly. And I look forward to it. Yeah, so much to talk.
Over.
You make me want to dance now. Thank you very much, and you have a great weekend.
Okay, well, thank you too, and I'll talk to you later.
You got it. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. For Close Up Talk Radio, I'm Jim Masters. Thanks for joining us. Peggy will be with us next week right here on Close Up Talk Radio. You have a great week. Take care.